Greetings. How is everybody?
Yeah, I hope they're well. I hope they're good.
I hope they're good. Are you good?
I'm always good, Tom. You know me.
I do know you. You're jolly. You're jolly.
Like Father Christmas.
Yeah. So, listeners, welcome, welcome. We've been out of action for a little while. I think our schedules as well. My schedule just got a bit manic. And yeah. You haven't been very well, have you?
No, I haven't been well. Bit of throwing up. Very nice.
I brought all those London germs down to Cornwall with me. That's what it was.
You did. That's what it was.
Your country.
My body's obviously not got used to it. Yeah.
So, yeah, different dynamic again. We are back to being thousands of, well, hundreds of miles apart.
Hundreds of miles.
Geography was never my strong suit. And connected.
We're millions of miles away.
I'm in deep space right now. I'm like, yeah. How do you know I'm not? How do you know I'm not at home? I might be. Don't question me. Okay, so what did we do last time? Rambo. Any notes on Rambo?
No.
I think we did all right, really. I quite like
it. We did all right.
Rambo? Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a few nice deviations. That was a pretty good episode.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what are we doing this week?
We are doing High Fidelity.
We are.
Yeah.
So, what's your relationship with this like?
I saw the film first.
Okay.
Quite a while ago now, I think.
Yeah.
When was it released? It was released 2000, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot. I kind of had it in that era in my head, but I had the feeling it was a little bit earlier. But no, 2000, bang on.
2000. So I must have seen it a couple of years after it was released or something like that.
Okay.
I can't remember when I saw it, but I remember really enjoying it. And the book I've just picked up for this.
Oh, nice one. So you have read it?
Mm.
Awesome. Mm. Cool.
Yeah. Just finished.
I watched this, it must have been around the time it was released.
Yeah.
Maybe like a year after or so. Mm. And then I read it a couple of years after that, but I haven't read the book in a while. So I'm quite glad that you have, because I can't really remember it too well. But yeah, this film, it's weird, because thinking about it, I forgot how much I loved it. Like, when I was in my teens, I bloody loved this film. I must have seen it about 50 or 60 times.
Yeah.
Because sitting down to watch it again, I kind of knew it word for word, you know?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Mm. And you quite like your records, don't you?
Well, this is interesting. I do now, and I think that this film had a lot to do with it. You know? I think because it's shortly after I saw this that I started collecting vinyl and things like that.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of Rob Gordon in Tom Barrett.
You'd like a bit of Rob Gordon inside Tom Barrett.
I would. I like the melancholia. Cool. So you like this too, then? You're a fan of this, yeah?
Yeah, no, I really enjoy it, yeah. It's a bit like, I always think it's like one of those girly romantic comedies, but for men.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, well, it's funny because someone described it as a romantic comedy when I was like reading about it. And would you say it was a romantic comedy?
Well, it's a comedy about romance, so yeah, I would say so.
Jesus, put me in my place. Yeah. I mean, I guess you're right, but I don't. I find it really hard to label it as that because romantic comedy, in my mind, is for weddings and things like that, you know?
No, I understand what you're saying. I think it is, in its basic form, it is a romantic comedy, but it's just... It doesn't feel like a romantic comedy because there's a little bit more going on,
It's a bit more down to earth, isn't it? It feels quite authentic. You know what I mean by that? It feels quite like it could happen, you know?
I think it's because it's talking about real emotions, not some very exaggerated sort of blown out of proportion thing. You know, someone's laughter. Yeah, it always seems a bit over the top in romantic comedies, where this one's very much based in like reality.
Yeah, and I mean, there are big moments, but they kind of match, don't they? The moments that get overblown in it, they would be overblown in real life in this situation.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So, just a very brief rundown of the plot. So, main character is Rob Gordon, who owns and operates a record shop.
Mm-hmm.
In the film, that's in Chicago, called Championship Vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And he breaks up with his long-term girlfriend, Laura, and that sends him into a bit of a tailspin. So then he starts sort of like going through his past and kind of thinking about his ex-relationships and kind of self-pity, really, isn't it? It's everybody's always left me and I want to find out why. So it's like this journey of self-discovery that kind of goes on, I suppose. And then while that's happening, it's also about the breakup and reconciliation, really, isn't it, of him and Laura?
Yeah, him and Laura, yeah.
Okay.
That's a pretty decent summary of the plot.
That's kind of it, isn't it? I mean, a lot happens within that, but that's the journey, isn't it?
When you put it in a basic form, it doesn't sound like a lot happens, does it?
I was just thinking that, because normally we spend bloody ages talking about the plot, but that's about it.
Yeah.
The book is Nick Hornby.
Yep.
Written in 1995.
Yeah. I believe it was his first non-fiction book.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Well, he wrote Fever Pitch first.
True.
Which is autobiographical. And then this one is his first non-fiction bit of writing.
I didn't know that, because I mean, I do like Nick Hornby. I've read a couple of his stuff, but I didn't know that. I don't know a lot about Fever Pitch, but really, this is the Nick Hornby that I enjoy, like High Fidelity and About a Boy. That's the kind of stuff that I like reading, you know?
Yeah.
But one thing we should say about this film and the book is that music is just all the way through it, isn't it? It's, you know, it's about a guy who runs a record shop, and he's really into it, and it's just constantly all the characters are talking about music and relating what's happening to songs and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a big music film.
So on that one, I have a quick question for you, Tom.
Okay.
Okay, top five band or / recording artists of all time.
Man, go. Start with an easy one.
I was gonna hit you with your top five songs of all time, but that's I couldn't come up with top five. So,
all right, okay, this is one thing we should say, because like the whole way through the book and the film, this is how they chat, and they have, you know, like the guys in the record store, and Rob does it all the time. He just makes these top five lists, doesn't he? And that's really how he gets on this story.
Top five, and it's to do with music.
Yeah, and his whole journey starts by listing his top five most painful breakups. So, it's... but right, my top five bands or recording artists. I'm not going to do them in any particular order, but the Beatles.
Yeah.
The Flaming Lips.
Flaming Lips.
The Doors.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably have to say Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And then, like, the last one would really, really fluctuate. Like, at the moment, I'd probably say someone like Harry Nilsson. But then Donovan can easily, you know, get bumped up into that top five, depending on where I am.
Not Jason.
Yeah.
To clarify, not Jason. Not Jason Donovan.
No. Although there are
too many
for everyone at home. No, not Jason Donovan. Donovan. So 1960s folk singer, beautiful voice. Lovely man.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
Top five. In no particular order.
Yeah.
The Who.
Yep.
The Who. Beatles. David Bowie.
Oh, Bowie.
REM.
Okay.
And it fluctuates between the Kinks or the Small Faces. So at a minute.
Can we just combine our lists? Because I think I like yours a little better than mine.
I've had longer to think about it. Though.
Yeah, you threw it on me, man. You threw it on me. So, okay, so how do you feel about this film, Mike? Because when I was watching it, like, I just kind of, I really relate to this story. Like, I can kind of see myself as Rob in a lot of it, and I think a lot of the things that he goes through, I can kind of, like, I can just really relate to it. I think a lot of the things that he's done, I have been there. Would you kind of feel the same way? Or?
Yeah, I agree. Totally. The whole way through, all the breakup stuff and everything, I can understand that completely. Because I think everyone, once you've reached, let's say about 25, you've experienced most of those sort of breakups and those sort of situations, I think. So, yeah, I think anyone really could relate with them. Unless someone was a nun or monk or someone that never had a relationship in their life.
Definitely, and I think that's what I mean. That's what I meant when I said it was authentic, because it just you can see, really see yourself in his situation, you know. And also the people that these five women that he revisits as well, I kind of get a sense that they are almost archetypes for relationships as well, because I can kind of recognise those characters, you know, and I've not been in exactly the same situations, but I've definitely been in similar ones, you know.
Yeah, with similar sort of people, yeah.
Mm. So, I mean, it's very relatable. Yeah. It's a really, really relatable story. But I guess we should probably start talking about the characters. I mean, Rob in the film is very, very likeable. Would you agree on that?
I would, yeah. My wife doesn't.
Really? What's your wife got to say?
The whole way through, she was saying that he was a bit of a prick.
Okay. what were her reasons for that?
I can't remember what her reasons were for that. Hang on one sec. What were your reasons for that? Hang on one sec.
It was the thing with the first girl
where we met
her.
Ah, yeah.
But then I got
over it. Yeah, you got over it. Right, okay. So it's basically when the second person he breaks up with, and it's what's it she says? He's trying to get like under a bra or something like that, and she invites him in and says, "What's the point?"
Yeah,
you know, never goes anywhere. And from that point, she was like, "Oh, he's such a prick," which, you know, I can understand. Why she would think that as a woman, I would understand that. But I kind of understood where he was coming from as a bloke. Not that I'd ever say that at all in my life, but but I'm sure you've been in a similar situation, Tom.
Yeah, no, I totally, yeah, I totally see where you're coming from. And the other thing to bear in mind is that happens when he's like, well, he's still a teenager then, isn't
still
he?
Still a teenager. I think the problem was also that it's John Cusack playing him as a teenager as well, so there's no you couldn't figure out he was a teenager. It just looks like
John Cusack. Yeah, yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting that you pull that one up, because I was thinking that, like, because when he meets her as an adult as well, and he kind of like has that little argument with her at the table and says, "Oh, why did you reject me?" And she gets really upset and says, "Well, you rejected me. I didn't reject you. You know, I just wasn't ready for that."
Yeah.
And he kind of, that doesn't affect him at all. It just bounces off him, and he ends up feeling better because he's just discovered he wasn't rejected, and he doesn't even think for a second about how much he upset her back then.
No, that's it.
There is that side to Rob where he is a little bit selfish and he's a little bit of a waster, you know.
I'm not defending him. I'm just saying I'm really not. He is a bit of a prick, but
yeah,
I also sympathise with him as well. Which,
yeah, no, totally. He handled it badly, but I can understand that. You know, I can sympathise with the situation.
But I mean, when we've all been that age and we've all done stupid things that we wish we'd never said when we've grown up, because I've been, has no remorse for it whatsoever.
Man, I have like crippling attacks of embarrassment when I think about some of the shit I did when I was 19. But
yeah, I do. It's funny, I always think of things like, I'll be sat on the bus thinking about nothing at all, and then something will creep into my head, and I'll groan out loud.
Oh, I know, I do that.
And I think, oh shit, everyone in the bus now has heard me groan out loud. Yeah. And I'm further embarrassed.
The folly of you.
Yeah. It will haunt you for the rest of your day.
It really does. So if you are listening to this and you're 19, get your act together. Learn from our mistakes.
Yeah.
But I think also the Rob in the book, Rob Gordon in the book, there's a lot more of that in him, I think. Would you agree with that?
A lot more of what?
A lot more of that selfish Rob.
Yeah, but I think also, see, that what the book is able to do is explain why he's done certain things.
Of course, yeah.
And elaborate on them, so it's not just as simple as, well, that one is pretty simple, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, he does other prickish things, which he can later elaborate on and justify a bit better.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of, but then also there's a lot of times when he's quite nice as well.
Oh yeah, he.
Which I think there's a balance. There's more of a balance in the book, I think.
Okay.
Between, you know, the good things he does and the bad things he does.
Well, he's a very human character, isn't he? You know, he's flawed. He's deeply flawed, but he is also capable of being very, very nice. You know, like, for instance, when they show the story of how he and Laura first met, and this is in the film, I can't quite remember how it is in the book, but he's a DJ and he makes her a mixtape, you know, and that, you see a different side of him then, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much the same as it is in the book. But, I mean, there's also, what is that? There's a whole thing. He gets a call in the book. He gets a call from some woman saying he's got a load. They've got a load of records to sell.
So off he goes. Yeah.
Off he goes to find them, and they're all like first editions or mint condition ones, rare ones. And she says, "Oh, you can have them all for a fiver." And he says, "I'm not giving you a fiver for this. Please let me give you 50 quid." And she went, "I don't want 50 quid. I want a fiver for them because I want to spite my husband."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's. And even then he says no, and he says he will regret it to the day he dies that he didn't buy him. But I think because, like, examples like that, it's just little things to take away from all the shitty things he does and all the selfish things he does.
Yeah. Interesting enough, that scene was shot. That was going to be in the film. It's on the deleted scenes.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Because he is taking a phone call in one scene and takes a number down.
That's it. Yeah, he says, yes. I am interested. Yeah. Then the next thing that happened, what was going to happen in the film, was there was that scene going to play out.
Oh, right. Okay.
Can I ask you a question? Would you have bought them?
If I knew what I was looking at, probably.
I would have done.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have even thought about it. Not a good sign, is it?
No.
But yeah, so I mean, he's a really good character, Rob. He's identifiable and human and flawed and how do you think John Cusack played him? Do you think he was a good choice?
I think he was a very good choice. This is interesting because I was trying to think of it. In the book, this is all set in North London.
Yeah.
Whole book set in North London, not in Chicago in the book the film.
Yeah, Chicago. Yeah.
And I think John Cusack is like a perfect person to play him. But I was thinking, if they made like a British version of him, who the hell would they get to play him?
That's a good question.
Because it would inevitably be either Hugh Grant or Colin Firth or someone who really don't fit it, really.
Either of them, really, could it?
No, it couldn't be either of them, but that's who they would end up getting to play them. But they're the only British actors that can be in a film like that, apparently. But I couldn't think of a single person.
Well, I mean, my first thought is Simon Pegg. Like, but I don't think he could really pull it off. I'm not saying, you know, I love Simon Pegg, but I think he would have turned it more into a comedy, you know?
Yeah, you need the depth as well on the other side as well.
Yeah. A really good question. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I couldn't think. And then I tried to cast the other characters as well, and I was like, I can't. What's it called? Barry and
Dick and Barry. Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't cast them either. I thought someone would think Bill Bailey. That would be a good idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But I didn't. I couldn't figure out which one of those two he played. It couldn't be. Couldn't be Barry.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. If a cast, I mean, this is us sitting down and trying to cast it. But if a casting agent was doing it or a studio was doing it, it probably would have been Simon Pegg as Rob, Bill Bailey as Barry, and Kevin Eldon as Dick. You know, because they suit those types. They're not necessarily right for the part, and the whole film would have been much, much broader had those three played it. But
yeah,
I can kind of rationalise those choices. You know?
But what was the original question? Completely lost track.
You were talking about just London.
London. Yeah. Oh no, John Cusack. That's who we were talking about.
Well, what you're saying there, I think that's a sign that it's been really well cast. If you can't imagine anyone else playing those parts, that's a really good sign, surely.
I couldn't think of anyone else, you know, who could have done both aspects of it—the drama, if you will, and the comedy. And plus, I mean, he had a big hand in writing it as well. So so I mean, it must be a lot easier to get into the material if you've already written it as well.
Well, of course, yeah, of course it is. So, what do you think of the other two characters you mentioned there? Like, there's two other employees in the store, Dick and Barry.
Dick and Barry, yeah. Well, again, I think they're spot on, really. Mm. I mean, if you were going from the book, I don't think they changed many of Barry's lines at all.
No?
Because I've read it fairly recently and watched the film. It's pretty much word for word. There might be some Americanisms thrown in, but it's pretty much, to be honest, actually, most of the film you can see is just taken from the book. There's not a lot of dialogue that's changed.
I do remember that, like watching it and trying to remember what the book was like. I do remember thinking, like, well, this is as close to a straight adaptation as you're going to get. You know, I think the biggest thing they've changed is the location.
Yeah, that's it. And really, it really doesn't matter where it's set, really.
No.
It needs to be in a city, yeah, of course. But, I mean, you could have had it anywhere, really, in any city. It's the same sort of thing.
But I think Chicago was a good choice because, I mean, you and me, we lived, like, quite close to London for a good few years, and the look of Chicago, or at least the look of the sides of Chicago that they show, it's not too far away from, like, you know, I was thinking of Soho and places like that, you know, or Camden. They're very, very similar looks.
The book's set in North London, so that's around Camden Way and all that stuff. It's very similar. I was reading that they chose Chicago as well because it had a very big alternative music scene as well.
Yeah.
Chicago, which, I mean, is perfect for a record shop, and where these people are very snobby, if you will, about music as well. It's a perfect place for it, isn't it? It shares a lot of similarities with North London.
Yeah, I mean, if this film had to be made in America, I'm glad that they chose Chicago rather than New York, because it makes it less of a cliche as well, you know?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Okay. I was thinking as well, another thing about the casting in this... I think this is the first time I really had seen Jack Black in anything. You know?
I think that as well, actually. It could have been... I'd seen him in other... You may not have realised you'd seen him in other things, because he's been, like, independent. No, not Independence Day.
What is going on?
What?
Can you... It sounded like you were just stabbing your microphone.
Oh, no, I was stabbing the table, sorry. I've seen him in.
He's in Mars Attacks, isn't he?
Mars Attacks, that's it. Yeah, but that's the first proper role I think he had, or that I remember him seeing him in. Anyway.
What's funny is, like, you've just said that Barry is pretty much as he is in the book, in the film. But that part is almost like it feels like they just let Jack Black on stage and do his thing. You know, it doesn't really feel like he's playing a character there.
No. Because I bet he was like that at one point. I mean, he's in a band, isn't he? Tenacious D, and he's very up on his music. So I would have thought at one point he was just like that, and he probably was a bit obnoxious about his tastes and things. Well, this is an assumption. I don't know the bloke, but he may have been.
No, but you're probably right.
I am. But yeah, it's got that loud, brash, sort of over-opinionated. He can do that very well, can't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's very right for this part, if that's how Barry is in the book. You know?
And I think John Cusack said he had him in mind for it. I think he turned it down at one point.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
I tell you what's funny about this film is the director.
Yeah.
Because it's Stephen Frears, you know, and Stephen Frears is, you know, British, very sort of classic. I would say he's a classic British director, you know, sort of schooled on theatre and things like that.
Yeah.
And he does this so well, but it's not something I would think of as being a Stephen Frears film, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because, yeah. I mean, I do remember some of the making of and some things like that. There did seem to be clashes between him and, say, Jack Black, for instance, you know?
Yeah. I bet.
Interesting. Yeah. And it was also, because in the film, one of the ways that they're able to make it such a direct adaptation is by having Rob just talk to the camera. You know, he breaks the fourth wall and he just directly addresses the audience, which, you know, if you're adapting a book, that's a perfect thing to do if you can pull it off, because it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, that's...
And apparently I'd read that John Cusack didn't want to do that, like, and because he was writing the script, it wasn't in there for a very, very long time. But then when Stephen Frears came on board, he suggested it again, and then everybody went with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that was the right decision to make.
Yeah, I think John Cusack said I'd be on screen too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I admire him for saying. I doubt you'd hear many Hollywood actors say that.
No,
you know,
but, I mean,
I'd be on screen too much. But it's good that they did it, because it adds a lot more to it. There's, I think it would have been impossible to do that story without that, because then you'd have to have very clumsy dialogue of someone saying it to someone else.
Yeah. It allows you to get to know him, and it allows you to identify with him so much more, because you've got him telling you what he's going through, rather than doing that through, you know, mise-en-scene or motif or dialogue. He's talking to you, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's what draws you into the film, because you feel like you're a part of it then.
Yeah.
Mm.
Remind me, the dialogue that he does to camera, again, would you say that that's kind of, would you say there's a direct relation to that in the book as well?
Oh, pretty much. I mean, it's, yeah, it's pretty much, because, I mean, the narrative in the book is pretty much the same, isn't it? It's talking, it's like his journal, and he's talking to you.
Yeah.
And it is pretty much just, I wouldn't be surprised if it was just a cut and paste job, really.
Well, it bloody well worked, didn't it?
But I think that's a testament to the book, to be honest, if you can keep so much of the dialogue for it. Because a lot of the time, it's you'll hear lines and you'll go, that's from the book. Well, right. I will anyway.
yeah.
You know, that bit's from the book, and, you know, oh yeah, they've changed that. That's a bastardization of that dialogue or whatever. But it is pretty much word for word the whole way through. So, I mean, you must have done a good job first time.
Yeah. I mean, there's some dialogue in this film that I really, really like. And again, watching it back after being so obsessed with it as a teenager, there were lines that, my God, I just used to say all the time. Like, one of the first things Rob says in the film, he just screams out the window at Laura, if you really wanted to mess me up, you should have got to me earlier.
Yeah.
That is such a good line, and it sums up just how he's feeling, you know, because he's upset and he's hurt, but he wants to say to her that, like, oh, you didn't do this, I was fucked up anyway.
Yeah. Which is in the book as well. But what was I going to say? I don't know, I've lost it. Go on, carry on.
So, right, let's just talk about the flow of the story, because it does follow the same order, really, doesn't it? You know, Rob breaks up with Laura, he goes through his ex-girlfriends, then him and Laura kind of start talking again, really, don't they?
I mean, it's pretty much exactly the same. I mean, I mean, it is divided up a bit. I mean, it goes through the girlfriends and stuff, the stories of the girlfriends in the film. It does that, like, every so often, isn't it? There's a chunk of that, and then something else. It's all listed first in the book. It's all, these are my top five, this is what happened, blah, 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 which it'd probably been better to do it the way they did in the film, to be honest, break up. Because it was a bit like, okay, I'm getting the idea,
yeah.
Heart broken five times, at least. Let's get to the story. But other than that, it's pretty much, yeah, pretty much the same flow with a few little deviations.
Because, I mean, what, I really like this film, but one issue I had watching it again was the resolution. It felt very, very rushed to me. You know, like, because her father dies, he's invited to the funeral.
Yeah.
She sleeps with him at the funeral, and then it seems like from that, within a matter of minutes in screen time, they're living together again, and Rob's sorting this record company out, and then, you know, I think really only 15, 20 minutes after they've slept together again, Rob's sorting his life out with a record company, and he's back in love with Laura, you know? I mean, did you have the similar sort of feeling watching it?
It's funny, actually. By the time, but just before the funeral, I was reading this book and I left the book at work. And I, you know, and it was on my last day of work until I'd finished. So I have 3 days off between that. So I didn't have the book for 3 days and I thought, oh, I'm just going to watch the film. And I got up just before the funeral started. And so I couldn't remember what it was, what happened at the end.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, that's okay. It does seem a little rushed, but it's a, and then I read the book, and then I finally got the book back and I read that.
Right.
And it made a lot more sense, I think.
Okay.
It made a lot more sense. Because, like you said, it was rushed. It was pretty much like shagging a car and then we're back together again.
Yeah, yeah. If only it were that easy.
Yeah. But let's see. In the book, we've got a nice... it's not a nice bit. There's a part there, it's almost word, like I said, everything in the book, in the film is almost word for word.
Yeah.
So what was it? They're getting in the back seat of the car or something. And what's it? She says, it's been a long time since I've seen you from up here, from this angle or this position or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do you know the line I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And then it's implied they just have sex. In the book, she says that, and then he says something like, oh, I haven't got any condoms or got any protection or something. She says, oh, that's all right. And he goes, yeah, but what about Ian? He's like, what about Ian? He's like, how am I supposed to know he's not got something?
Yeah.
Oh, no, what was it? Oh, no, have you been using protection with Ian as well? That's it. And she starts bawling and stuff and saying, oh, my God. It's weird because a couple of weeks ago we were very intimate and now you can't even have sex with me without thinking you're going to die or something to that effect.
Right, yeah.
And then they go off and have a talk and they kind of talk their issues out as well. Which I think makes it a bit more understandable then rather than just, oh, we've had sex, everything's better, woo!
Yeah, I mean, that I think I would have liked
that feeling lasts
like
about
that.
5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And then she's going up to Ian. And, yeah. But, I mean, I would have liked something that back in some of that back into the film because I kind of like when I had it on because I've seen it so many times. I was kind of doing other stuff, watching it. But I went out for a cigarette at one point. I left it playing, and I went out at the funeral. By the time I'd had a cigarette and come back in, Rob had a record company and a girlfriend. Well, how long was I gone for? You know? Yeah, that was a little bit. Yeah, and that never struck me before. Like when I used to watch it, it never even crossed my mind. But now I'm like, well, hang on, guys, life's not quite that rosy. You know?
Not that rosy, yeah. Also, I think the record company is a bit, what the fuck?
Yeah.
The whole time he's saying how he's broke and he's, you know, he's gonna have to shut the record shop down because he can't afford it. He's got no money. Yet he's somehow able to fund printing records.
I kept thinking that, like, because I mean, there's the big thing in the book as well that he's borrowed a lot of money from Laura. So where's the money for the record release come from?
Yeah, precisely. And I think it's very obvious, because I think that where those kids steal the records, and then the whole record deal thing, I think that those two bits do stick out a bit like a sore thumb from the rest of it. And that's because it is not in the book.
I did wonder about that, because I was just about to ask you that question, because it's not really... You can lift that out of that story and it makes no difference, does it, really?
No. But all it is to... I was having this conversation with Caitlin.
Mm.
And I was saying, I reckon some Hollywood executive couldn't deal... wouldn't think it was an achievement with the original ending. Because all the original ending is... Okay. is He has that club, Dance Music for Old People or whatever it's called.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. I don't remember the name exactly, but yeah.
Yeah, something like that. He does a club night for people in their mid to late 30s.
Right.
Like that. That's all he does in the book, is he gets... And he feels like he's accomplished something and he's doing something with his life.
Yeah.
At that point. I think someone in Hollywood just thought, well, that's not good enough. He's got to be, do you know what I mean? He's got to have some money. He's got to be making money somehow.
Yeah, that I guess that's it, isn't it? That's a much more American ending. It's the American dream, isn't it? You know, he can't be successful unless he's going to be famous in 10 years' time, you know?
That's it. And I don't think they were satisfied enough with... because the whole way through, I think, he talks about... He doesn't necessarily crave money and fame or what have you.
No.
But...
He does talk about being broke a lot.
he does talk about being broke a lot, yeah. I mean, yeah he does talk about that, but he doesn't necessarily want to be rich and famous. And some huge... I think he just wants to be comfortable the whole way through. I think he wants to be doing... If his record shop was making money, I think he'd be quite content. But because it's not making money, he's pissed off. I mean, that's what I think.
I totally agree with you. It feels... Yeah, as I said before, that's a very American thing to have dropped in. I think if it had been made in Britain, that probably wouldn't have been put in.
No. I think it would have just ended with the club and, you know, the adoration you'd get from people rather than the financial gain.
Yeah, definitely. So, Mike.
Yeah.
Top five dream jobs.
Top five dream jobs. Oh, God. Let me see. Guitarist.
Okay.
No, wait. No, musician, yeah, just a musician. Yeah.
Just any sort of musician, yeah?
Yeah.
And is that like session musician, or do you want to be, you know, the edge?
I don't want to be the edge.
Of course. Ed Sheeran.
musician, any sort of musician.
Sort of musician, okay.
Yeah, novelist.
Novelist, nice, okay.
Yeah. Successful actor.
Okay. Yeah, I'm noticing a pattern here.
let me see. I don't know. That's my top three. I can't think of another two.
They're pretty good.
I may think of another two in the course of this recording.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Oh, puppeteer.
Puppeteer. Yeah. No, I can see you doing that. Yeah.
Teacher.
Teacher, nice.
Yeah.
That does feel a bit like architect on the end of Rob's list.
No, it's not. It was slowly going from, you know, not possible whatsoever, slowly down to, well, yeah, a bit of hard work, you could probably do that.
Oh,
what's your top five?
Bricklayer. Deliveryman. Courtroom official.
actually. I might bump up Idiot to mine, actually.
No, my Series 5 would be film director.
Yep.
Author.
Yep.
Probably stand-up comedian at the moment.
Yep.
And then either, the last two would be, the one would be running a bar, owning and running a bar, although I've got to say, owning and running a record shop.
Yeah.
Because I was watching that Championship Vinyl, and I just thought, you know what, I'd bloody love that. Because I think that's something else they've captured really, really well.
Yes. Is
what people do when they're bored at work.
Yes. Yes.
You know, there's a section where they're sitting around at work doing their top fives and things like that. You do that. We used to do that when we worked together. It's,
yeah.
They've got that very well, you know.
Yeah. So what was the last one?
They're my last two, so running a bar, and the last one was running a record shop.
Right, running a record shop. Ah, cool. Yeah. I don't know, I'd quite like to run a shop.
Yeah, well, you did for a while.
Well, I mean, own a shop, sorry. Not run a shop, run a shop, but I mean, own a shop. No, that would be quite cool. I'd probably sell toys.
And puppets, you could sell puppets.
Toys and puppets, yeah. Only because I'd like to play with them.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd never even sell them.
I probably wouldn't open. I'd just probably sit in there playing with all the toys.
We're closed.
Go away, kid. Your money's not welcome here.
That's a nice little tangent. So, okay, what do you think of the soundtrack of this film, Mike?
It's bloody great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bloody great. Well, at one point, I did jump up and go, oh, Caitlin, it's the Kinks. And
Are the Kinks in it?
The Kinks are in it. Oh, I can't remember, but the Kinks are, yeah, what is it? I can't remember which song it is, but it was the Kinks. I was like, oh my God, because you never hear them outside of a British film, really.
No, you don't, do you? I didn't notice the Kinks, because I was watching it this time, and I thought, Christ, when I was like 16 watching this, this music just must have gone over my head, but now it's like I can sit there and I can go, oh, that's Bob Dylan. That's Harry Nilsson, you know, that's the Beta Band and things like that. And I can notice it a lot more now.
Yeah.
How does that compare to the soundtrack of the book? Because they must talk about music in the book. Do you think that they've authentically moved that across?
I would say it's a lot different because it's set in Chicago and it was, 5 years later than the book was written.
Yeah.
It's different because it's definitely got an American feel to it, and where they're very much, and it's more like punk and newer stuff, underground bands, things like that in the film.
Yeah.
The book is, there's a lot of like Motown and jazz and all sorts of different things like that. I mean, Al comes up all the time, and, you know, Aretha Franklin and things like that.
Okay.
Which I think I prefer the music in the book.
Well, yeah, like, I think again it would be odd because they're both the things that we've been talking about are very American music. But I think the music you're describing in the book, it sounds a bit more like to a British sentiment to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially at that point, yeah. I mean, a lot of blues, a lot of which I don't think was. I think we're a bit behind because it's not in vogue. Over there,
no
anymore.
Is Springsteen in the book in the way that he is in the film?
Bruce Springsteen doesn't speak to him, but
no.
He does describe what was it, like breakups or something, like a Bruce Springsteen song, and he does bring him up a couple of times in it.
Okay,
That bit's very new, but it's I think that bit fits as well because it's not really in the book, that Bruce Springsteen segment.
No,
but it doesn't count, I don't think either.
Yeah, I mean, again, for me, that was another one of the little Americanisms that I think had definitely found its way in there.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, I've kind of reached my end of my notes. How about you?
Yeah, so have I. So have I. Really, I mean, it's. I thought we were going to struggle with this one, to be honest, because it's such a close adaptation.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? I think there's, everything we've spoken about so far.
Yeah, and actually, I wanted to get your thoughts on why you think it's so easy to adapt this.
Well, I think I think it's one of the biggest points is what I said earlier, the fact that they've allowed the character to talk to the camera has made it very easy. But also I think the book itself is only 122 pages, so it's quite a short book. And the plot is very straightforward. It's a very simple story. You know, even though there's tons going in there, it's quite A to B, really.
Yeah.
So I think that has all helped. And you know, the material's helped and the way they've decided to do it, they made it very, very easy for themselves, I think.
Yeah. I think any book sort of this, it's funny. I mean, the books we reviewed and stuff, or the books that come and stuff, I think we found a lot of the time that the big action books or what have you, tend to deviate quite a lot from the book.
Yeah.
And which surprised me, because there's often quite a lot in the book that you could take and is very good, but they feel they need to change it. Whereas this is about emotions and what have you. And it's very, they never seem to change these sort of books, these sort of, well, I can't think of the word, the emotionally driven books. They always be quite true to the source, I think.
Well, I guess you can afford to be, can't you, if you're telling that kind of story, you know, because people will go to this film or would have gone to this film with certain expectations. And, well, you go and see any film with expectations, but when you go and see an action film, you don't expect to be dealing with, like, emotion and feelings and things like that, which I suppose is why they end up getting left by the wayside in things like Rambo. But with this, the audience already know that it's going to be about the end of a relationship. So they're going in there open to hearing about characters think and talk like that, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. Funny old world. What studio made this? Touchstone. Do you know who owns Touchstone?
No, who owns Touchstone then?
Disney. Disney bought this.
They own everything, don't they?
They bloody well do, Mike. Bloody well do.
One little thing I wanted to pick up on, actually.
Yeah.
My last thing, actually. Is the attention to the detail in the film.
Okay.
So what the book says. And there was one little bit that caught my eye. Is, you know the scene where Rob's sitting there, where he proposes to Laura?
Yes.
Yeah, in that half-assed sort of way. And he sat in that pub with, what is it, like a Corona or something like that? With the lime?
Yeah.
With the lime in it, and he's pushing it in. And that is described exactly in the book. He's got this same beer, he's doing exactly the same thing with pushing the lime in because he's nervous.
Yeah.
I think that's something that didn't actually need to be in the film, but you've taken that part from it. So I think either John Cusack was like a big fan of the book.
Yeah.
He took a lot of those, or he's just lazy actor then. I've just opened a question.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think that's a real sign that the writer, and you know, who was John, one of whom was John Cusack, I think they must have had a real affection for this, because you're right, you don't need to take that. He's taken that because he loved reading that in the book.
Yeah, it struck a chord with him, yeah.
Which must have been great for him, because, like, you know, how many times have you read a book, loved it, and imagined yourself playing the main character in the film?
Yeah.
To have actually lived that must have been incredible for him.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Well done, John, well done.
Well done.
So, Mike, book or film?
There's not much to call. There's not much between it, to be honest with you.
No?
If I had to, someone had to put a gun to my head and say, choose one, which I think you're doing, Tom.
I am doing that, yeah.
I would go with the book.
Okay.
Only for the fact that it's set in London, and I can imagine that I've been to a lot of the places that he's describing, and I can see and smell it and know what the people are like around there.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that, because there's a, you know, Mitchell and Webb?
Yeah.
In their radio show, they had a sketch about Nick Hornby, and right. it was like an advert for a Nick Hornby book, and they were saying, the new hit Nick Hornby novel, it's set in London, read it, there's pubs that you've been to in it. But I do know what you mean, you know, to be honest, it's been a very long time since I've read the book, and if I had to answer that question that I just asked you, I would say the film. but mainly because I was just absolutely in love with it when I was a teenager. But I do see where you're coming from. It's much nicer to have that story and then have that sense of like, oh, I can see my house from here, you know?
Yeah, That's the only thing, because I can connect with it that's slightly more because it's set in London and I know those places. You know, if it's talking about Camden, I know exactly. I was like, well, which part of Camden? We got the top, the bottom?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Because you feel like you sort of own it a little bit when that happens, don't you?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Like, I remember when I read War of the Worlds and they actually mentioned Chelmsford in that, the town I grew up in and I'm living in now. And it's like, I feel like I'm part of that story because it says that in it.
Yeah. Do you know what? A weird thing that when I was reading Misery, in the book, the book he's writing is set in like Cornwall somewhere.
Oh, and really?
The minute it said Cornwall, I was like, oh yeah, I get this now. And then he described some place, and I was like, nah, that's nowhere in Cornwall. You've ruined it for me now.
You just King has never been to Cornwall.
You just picked the name out of the hat, and you've disappointed me now.
Was he saying Cornwall, but then describing the White Cliffs of Dover?
Yeah, it was something, I can't remember what it was exactly, but I thought, no, that's not right. I can't picture that at all. You're rubbish.
In War of the Worlds, they just talk about Chelmsford being raised to the ground. Completely described.
Oh, I think it was about something about getting from Cornwall to London in an hour or something. And I thought,
oh, right, yeah, he teleported. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I can't do that now with a bloody train or a car. That's impossible. How have they done it in the 16th century with a horse and cart? Bollocks.
They had tunnels then, Mike. They had like steam-powered tunnels. that was Brunel's first like little invention. But I'm fed up with this.
Power of tunnels, Tom.
Cool. So, any other business on this? Is there anything you change about the film adaptation?
Anything I'd change? No, I wouldn't necessarily have that record deal thing.
No.
Okay, but no, maybe something else, but I couldn't think of anything. If I'd have to think about it.
I'd agree with you on that. I would say I'd like a little bit more, a little bit less pace in the ending, and I'd like there to be a little bit more discussion before everything builds to that happy resolution. And I think, like, the record company thing, I can live with that, but, you know, plant the seeds earlier, because it doesn't really happen until until they're getting towards the end of Act Two anyway, and that by that time it's too late to start introducing something new. You know, lay the seeds in the beginning, and then it will feel right in the end.
Yeah, I get that,
Awesome. Well, if you've enjoyed that, if you've sat through it, why not get in touch? I'm not going to shout at you this time. Be very calm about it. If you want to get in touch, here's the email address. backtothesourcepodcast@gmail.com.
There we go. Did that very well. You did that. I'm very proud of you, actually.
You owe me a fiver. You didn't think I could do it.
Send it in the post.
Marvellous. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.